Hi, I'm Liam O'Rourke. And did you see that third hour of Raw this week? The very next day, noted wrestling fan Ronda Rousey announced that she'd recently considered suicide. And I don't believe in coincidence.
I'm G. John Chase. I had a rather successful day at work. I got promoted. All I had to do was spank a man's ass, put his head down the toilet, have sex with a farm animal, and punch Jeremy Borash in the face. Just to get the full 10 points. It was worth it.
I'm Carl Jones. A man with a face only Kane's mother could love, a man whose repertoire is as stale and crusty as Bastion Bugger's jockstrap, and a man whose ethics are looser than Tammy Lynn Sitch after a cannabis binge.
I'm Matt Holt, and according to the rules of Desert Island Discs, I'm allowed to take a book to accompany the complete works of Shakespeare and the Bible. I'm going to take a work of complete fiction to equal parts humorous and tragic. Hulk Hogan, My Life Outside the Ring, get in that bag.
And I'm Luke Edwards, and I realised I didn't need to take a bunch of wrestling matches with me to a desert island. I could take WWE action figures and recreate any wrestling match I wanted to. WWE is selling its action figures for £20 each. They're marketing their TV to children and their toys to adults. What the fuck is wrong with this company?
This is the panel for the 73rd Squared Circle Gazette Radio, and you can hear part one of SCG's Desert Island Jewels next.
That's a magic number.
Three.
It is. It's the magic number.
Hello everyone and welcome to the 73rd Squared Circle Gazette Radio. I am Liam O'Rourke alongside Luke Edwards.
Me first, fuck. Hello.
G. John Chase.
I'm afraid I got some bad news.
Carl Jones.
Newspapers angry up the blood.
Matt Holt.
Evening all.
And we are back this week for a show that we're not exactly sure what to call, to be quite honest, at the time of recording, because Matt, this was your idea. You're back with us today on the podcast. You've become a fan of Desert Island Discs over the course of the recent history, from what I understand. barreling through these radio shows, I understand. Luke Moore on the Facebook page suggested we call this Desert Island Death Matches, which sounds like something that should be on last week's show, to be quite honest. Desert Island Jewels has been kicked around. Whatever it's going to be, the basic premise is, of course, if you're being abandoned, if you're being sent away to a desert island, then you can only take three professional wrestling matches of all time to take to occupy your time while you're there. What three do you choose? An interesting way to kind of look at different matches that we historically praise. Just to throw this to you here, Matt, first and foremost, explain why this appealed to you.
Yeah, it literally just came out the back of, as you said, I'm slowly making my way through about 60, 70 years of Desert Island Discs history, and the idea of it was really interesting, because instead of it being saying, oh, your favourite or the best, it's about actually how would you survive and what would you need to do that. Now, obviously, our most important part of survival is three professional wrestling matches.
But
taking that fact into consideration, it got me thinking, and from the perspective of it's not as straightforward as what three matches do I like. It's, you know, I don't want three matches with the same guy in it. I don't want three matches that are the same gimmick. You know, all that sort of stuff. And literally, it's enough to, I'm sure, as we'll find as we go through, to keep you up at night thinking how you would structure this. I know, for me personally, over the past 4 days, my list has just changed every single day, which is absolutely the point, is on any given Sunday you're going to give a different three, but we thought here and now.
Absolutely agree with that, because on the radio show they give eight songs. We were originally talking about doing five matches, and then when we kind of figured out how much feedback we were going to get, we thought that five matches was probably a bit of an ask, so we've narrowed it down to three and made it even more difficult. So I want to thank everybody, all of you fine contributors, the loyal listeners who have chimed in with all your thoughts for matches that you take on a desert island with you. For those of you who haven't heard us before, I should just chime in here and say that you can listen to all of our archive shows at squaredcirclegazette.com. You can join us at the Facebook page at facebook.com/scgradio, or subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Squared Circle Gazette Radio and making sure you never miss a show. But just to get to 21 pages of notes and feedback that we've whittled it down to here.
Burning down fucking forests at this point.
We're going to start off with Ambulance Chaser from the UK Fan Forum, who says, fantastic topic. I'm going to go with number one, Austin versus Bret Hart at WrestleMania 13. Simply one of my favourite feuds of all time. Austin antagonising Bret at every turn was just fantastic. It looked like a fight, a raw bone fight. Nothing like a scripted piece of backyard shite. It was hard-hitting, brutal, and the ending was classic. I have two favourite times as a wrestling fan. This was one. Number two, my other favourite period of wrestling was the late 80s, and I'll go with Hogan versus Andre at Mania 3, and the match that sums up my formative years. I cannot recall how many times I watched this match. It must literally be 100. To me, this is the defining match. match, and no matter, WWE's inflated attendance drew thousands of people to what was a spectacle. In his final match is RVD versus Jerry Lynn at Living Dangerously 99, a real mix here for Ambulance Chaser. I was a massive ECW mark in the late 90s. I used to get the tapes and try to push them on my mates at school who watched the WWF. This match to me was the peak of my love for the company. Rarely have I seen better chemistry between two guys. There's a sequence in this match where Van Damme goes for a leg sweep and Lynn hurdles and leg drops him in one motion. Fucking poetry. How over was Van Damme? So he's gone for a very interesting mix there. Austin, Brett, Hogan, Andre, and Van Damme, Jerry Lynn. One of those is on my list, Carl. I sense one of them is on yours too. We are going to get to our list, of course, throughout the course of the show, as they're mentioned by you, the loyal listeners. Austin and Brett's on my list. Carl, I know it is yours.
It is absolutely on my list. And we talked a little bit briefly before the show about how our list would change so frequently, as you alluded to before. And I think on another day, my three could fluctuate a little bit, but the one constant throughout is Brett against Austin at Mania 13.
This is one of the two matches that appears most regularly in the nominations from the listeners, by the way.
As the emailer alluded to, that there's a gritty nature to it. It comes off as a genuine fight, as sort of a genuine conflict. And I'm not someone who falls into this category of the self-conscious epic or anything like that. I'm not gonna criticise people stylistically. If a match works in whatever circumstance, it works. But just the nature of that feud, the way the sort of the gritty nature of the match itself, I think, you know, lends itself to the whole sort of the theme of the rivalry. And it's the last successful double turn that I think any company's ever done. If anyone can point out another one to me, by all means, go ahead. And I don't think there were many too successful double turns prior to that, so it just goes to show you how special that was.
Yeah, fantastic match, obviously. It's been talked about countless times, a fantastic performance from everybody involved, from Shamrock to the announcers. Just a great piece of pro wrestling theatre. I like what he's done in terms of a bit of a mix there, a bit of 90s, a bit of 80s. ECW is kind of the outlier. I will say I at no point considered any ECW matches for this list. Maybe that's a detriment of my own, but it didn't cross my mind, to be honest.
Well, Van Damme, Jerry Lynn was the one that immediately came to mind out of everything ECW did. But in my personal opinion, I actually disagree with the guy who wrote in. I actually think their second match at Hardcore Heaven was actually better.
Is that the one where Lynn gets the concussion?
Yeah, when he face plants.
Yeah. The reason why I like the second one more, because it was a great sequel to the first one, because it was like they built on what happened in the first one. And so, like, what was so classic about those matches was the sequences that they would do. And with the sequel, they added one extra bit, that kind of one-upmanship. I'm not against him going with Rob Van Damme, Jerry Lynn, because I, for quite a while, had the Hardcore Heaven match in my top five for quite a few years. It has been gazumped now.
Place your point in history when matches happened plays a massive factor into these. You know, it might be easy for someone watching who's younger who didn't watch that ECW stuff even around the time it happened to think, what, those reversal sequences, really? That, but at the time it was like watching just
The Matrix.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, snap. It literally snap. So I think that's important, and it will come in when I talk about some of my choices later as well, because judging other people's without that person's experiences is tough.
Just out of curiosity there, to give a little bit of credence to that middle match, in the feedback at all, did anyone else go for Hogan Andre?
I think a couple of people may have, yeah. I was surprised.
I just wonder, there is that sentimental element to it, so I wouldn't be surprised to see it crop up a few times again.
Mick Price on the Facebook page says, I would have to choose Austin versus Brett from WrestleMania 13, because it really solidified my journey into watching wrestling. Watching two guys just take each other out with such visceral reaction was amazing to a 14-year-old. Of course, Austin passing out is timeless and set in action 4 years of huge wrestling business. Second would be Masaru and Kobashi against Kawada and Taue, June 9th, 95 in All Japan. This is just a perfectly worked tag match. The match is somewhat frantic, but yet tells the story of a team in Kawada and Taue just simply trying to destroy their rivals time and time again. Last would probably be Flair and Steamboat from Class 6. The first time I watched it, I was absolutely floored. These two guys go out for nearly 60 minutes and put on a quick pace but never boring match that stands the test of time. The main reason I chose these was that for the first time I watched them to now, I can still find something new to enjoy. The other two matches made me run a gauntlet of emotions. The tag match is one that just makes me cheer, cringe, and be in awe. The clash match is fun simply because of the pace, and I absolutely love the commentary and banter between Terry Funk and Jim Ross, which helps set up Funk's turn at WrestleWar ever so slowly. The Misawa Kobashi and Kawada Taue tag was in my contention and still might make my final three. I haven't settled on it.
I thought there's gotta be Kobashi Misawa somewhere.
This tag match I love. Of all the tags they had, this is my favourite. When Kobashi got the injured leg, I love this match so much. I'm I've got one solid in my head, which is Austin and Brett. I've got to take that to the desert island, but I'm not sure on the other two. We're gonna. This is pretty much up to the listeners to sell me on it, pretty much.
I'm loving how all this is being done on the fly. I came to this podcast thinking, am I necessarily sold on my three? Maybe, maybe not. But those are my three, for better or worse. And I hear these two over the table. Fucking Cagney and Lacey over there. Still waiting to make their mind up.
Interestingly, I actually considered a few Masao Kobashi things in mind, because I am somewhat of a fan, but I don't fit... Like, they... It really created an impression on me when I first saw it. It was the first real Japanese wrestling I really saw outside of Tiger Mask and Dynamite. And it really did leave an impression on me. But because of the way my memory works, which is basically that it doesn't, and so I'd feel like a bit of a fraud if I put one of their matches in there. I am more than happy to sit back and remember the great moments.
Matt Applin on the Facebook page says, after many hours contemplating my options, I initially came up with a list of about 20. However, I managed to finally come up with the three I believed I could not live without. Number three is Brett versus Owen from WrestleMania 10. This match is one I absolutely loved as a 9-year-old and still do today. Not only is it the best opener in WrestleMania history, it may be the second best pay-per-view opener ever. I just wish that today's rosters would sit down, watch this match, and take notes as to what to do in a match regarding storytelling and psychology. Number two is the Brain Busters versus the Hart Foundation from SummerSlam 89. Yeah. This is, in my opinion, the best pay-per-view opener ever. At a time when tag wrestling was at its peak, my favourite tag team as a child, the Hart Foundation, and my favourite tag team as a more mature and educated man in Arn and Tully. They took part in a sublime piece of wrestling poetry. This match had everything you could ever want in a tag team encounter. A technical clinic from Brett and Tully, the power display by the Anvil, and the seminar that Arn Anderson and Bobby Heenan held on how to be the greatest man on earth. And number one, the second match on WrestleMania 3 to get a mention today, Ricky Steamboat versus Randy Savage from WrestleMania 3, obviously. Does this match really need any kind of justification as to why you could easily watch it on a constant loop and never get bored? So three all new contenders there.
And match number two of my three three match list is on there. This being Steamboat Savage. You did not see that pace worked in 1987. That is full throttle. You can see from the way that Dave Hebner's fucking sweating a gusher.
And it's pouring out of his arse.
And it's not because the company have just cottoned onto him selling shirts off the back of a lorry. It is an exceptional pace, and it's the culmination of a brilliant few. That there's that bit in the middle with Steamboat and his learning to speak again, which is maybe a bit hokey in truth. Starting off from the great angle of him having his larynx crushed on the rail, and the comeback is just absolutely sublime. You want to talk two men who are like, it's almost like ballet. You know, they glide around the ring. They, you know,
those arm drags, Carl.
It's crisp. Oh, those arm drags. Those arm drags.
Yeah. Through the legs, yeah. Arm drag. What a spot. Oh. Yeah.
Deep arm drags. Love them. And Ricky Steamboat was always going to make my list at some point. Love me some Steamboat. And the pop he gets for winning the IC title. On a show that me and Liam used to listen to, Sunday Night Submission, one of the co-hosts on there, he defied anyone to tell them that Hogan got as big a pop as Steamboat, or a bigger pop, I should say. And I'm 100% in agreement. The pop Steamboat gets certainly matches the Hogan one, in my opinion.
Don't want to not give credence to all the matches we're going to talk about today, but this is more about kind of analysing whether we'd put them in our list. Two of those matches, Steamboat Savage and Bret and Owen, were certainly crossing my mind, but I kind of decided to skip on both of them. Not because they're not great, but I'm looking for something different personally. Tiger Rick on the UK fan forum says, Warrior versus Savage from Mania 7. Still my favourite ever match. The story going in is great. The story coming out is great. And the story they tell through the medium of shoulder blocks, flying elbows, and talking to your hands is quite simply brilliant. I don't think I've ever seen another match where the story being told was so utterly simple and so completely compelling. I could watch this every day for the rest of my life, so it'd be quite useful on an island. His second pick is Royal Rumble 92. I know technically this is cheating, but this is the match I've watched the most down the years. In fact, I sometimes just listen to the commentary at work. I don't need to watch it, I can see it in my mind. And his third pick is the Hart Foundation versus Demolition from SummerSlam 1990. Another childhood favourite that I could happily watch any day of the week. No match brings a smile to my face like this one. Brett's my favourite ever, Hart's my favourite tag team ever, and this is their defining match together. I'm not going to claim that this is the best tag match ever, because technically it isn't, but it's by far my favourite, and the LOD interference to stop the blatant cheating just had me bursting with excitement as a 10-year-old.
Yeah, this is my first jump in, and it's the Rumble 92. Yep.
the second of the two that I was mentioning that got the most votes, by the way.
Okay, cool. I have where they're coming from with the cheating. No cheating at all in my book. It's an absolute fair entry. I've sat back while you guys have talked about some of the matches that absolutely would be on a million lists I'd make for best wrestling matches, but I didn't watch them at the time, so I lacked that personal connection. The Rumble 92, we had literally just got Sky, so this is around, I think, at the 91 Survivor Series I probably saw before this,
yep.
But then the Rumble 92, fantastic. Literally, I can remember watching it, and just, I talked at the start about how on Desert Island Discs they're allowed, they get given the complete works of Shakespeare. This match is wrestling Shakespeare for me. You know, it is just told so perfectly by everyone playing their parts. It literally reminds me of having all those figures in a toy ring, and so, you know, there's so many people that at the time it ticks off a list for me. I don't need to see a long Hogan match, but Hogan needs to be on my desert island somehow. So I think that this match just ticks so many boxes for guys for me. Brilliant match, brilliant, just everything. And the commentary that got mentioned, you can't not give that love.
Yeah, I was just about to say, you mentioned you giving it a comparison to Shakespeare, something like that. Any kind of great stories always has a great narrator,
yep.
And you can't find a better narrator for this match than Bobby the Brain Heenan, who is just like the best he will ever be on this show. He's absolutely phenomenal. He like puts this, he takes what's already a stacked Rumble, and he just takes it over the top.
Now, while I completely agree this is that the picking a Royal Rumble match would not be cheating, I couldn't bring myself to do it. I did mull over not just as well, a couple of Royal Rumbles, but doesn't it feel like a bit of an easy way out? Doesn't it? Is it just me?
I wouldn't say it's necessarily an easy way out, and I certainly wouldn't say it's cheating either. But I must admit, when I was thinking about sort of matches, I don't know why, in truth, in retrospect, but Rumbles never occurred to me. You know, sort of Survivor Series matches never occurred to me. I sort of almost got a tunnel vision of single and tag matches, but just because I did that, I wouldn't necessarily say it devalues anyone else's choices by any means.
Also, with Halty putting his hand up for one of his first three, I'm going to put mine up as well for one of my three. Savage Warrior. I'm not gonna argue with people who want to pick Steamboat Savage, because along as Savage is in everybody's list, I will die a happy man on my island. But I'm going for just the full Savage experience on this show, right? It's one of my favorite, probably if not my favorite WrestleMania match, and it's my favorite Savage match due to his performance as well, and it's just everything. It's like the use of Sensational Sherry and Elizabeth. It's just like I've got to include it because it's the final chapter of the Savage storyline with Elizabeth that they spent years building up, you know, which is something that you don't really get anymore in professional wrestling, years of storyline culminating in one moment. He wrestled like it was his last match. Just the intensity he had, the madman heel act is just freaking awesome. There's other ones that I'll go into in my other choices that are just as great, but like Savage is just so fucking on. Elizabeth was great with Savage. I thought Sensational Sherry, I thought, was just as good. It was literally like Elizabeth representing the angel, and like Sherry's the devil. Like Sherry represented everything that was bad with Savage, like the psychosis and just like the paranoia and just the evilness and stuff, and she just embodied that perfectly. They were such a great tandem. So when she, like, you know, obviously decides to turn on him, Elizabeth comes back, it's cheesy as fuck, but I don't care because I grew up on it and I had to have something from nostalgia wise in there. The great part with Sensational Sherry turning is like when she starts kicking him, even Heenan turns around and says, "Sherry, what are you doing?" The guy gave everything he had. Even when the Weasel turns around and says, "Oh, I love, take it easy." That's when you know you're a fucking heel. That's when you know you're a good heel. When another heel turns around and goes, "Whoa, take it easy."
Yeah.
All those hideous LA people at the home of the Clippers that night, grizzle ass.
Well, again, just to give some praise to Heenan, as he said, maybe their shoes are just too tight. And they were crying. Mr. Scorpio on the FOW board says, "For me, such choices would be nostalgia-fueled rather than looking for the most technically accomplished matches. On a desert island, I would want something to make me smile and lose myself in happy memories before resorting to gnawing off my foot because there's no food left." Number one, he goes with Steamboat and Savage and Mania 3, just a great match even 29 years later. I don't care what the critics say about how the match was put together move for move beforehand, the layout, the pace and intensity, the crowd, and also, crucially, the commentary with Monsoon and Ventura still make this very special. His second pick is the 92 Rumble, the best ever Rumble with the best individual performance, loaded with stars, a hot crowd, and of course, one of the most memorable commentaries from Heenan and Monsoon. And his third pick, rather out of left field, Hogan vs. Undertaker from this Tuesday in Texas. Yes, the actual wrestling is rather naff, with about half the moves in the match being eye rigs, but that's not the point. It's the soundtrack of the match that elevates it. A hot crowd throughout, Heenan and Monsoon selling the match so well, Flair and Bearer interfering, Jack Tunney falling over, and an exciting finish. So those two, again, I would not personally vote Hogan and Taker Tuesday in Texas, but he said it's nostalgia picks, and you can't argue with nostalgia picks.
No, I understand why people would go for a nostalgic element. Yeah, we've seen it with when Holty mentioned the Rumble, there's a nostalgia element to it, so I can completely appreciate that. But when it comes to that Hogan Taker match, I just, you know, bell to bell, it's just awful to watch. For me personally, there isn't anything in the match I think is done particularly well. You know, yes, you've got some nice sort of side bits, if you like, with Flair and Bear, but, you know, Jack on the take, Tunney's out there looking about as useful as a human corpse. The urn element to it doesn't really do it for me either, but, you know, but I like I say, I can appreciate a nostalgia element to it. I certainly think it's fair to say that that played a part for me when I was going through trying to narrow down a three-match list.
Supersonic on the FOW board says, going for something different across the board with nearly a decade apart in chronological order. His first one is the 2 out of 3 falls match between Steamboat and Flair that we've mentioned previously. Probably the greatest technical wrestling match to ever take place on North American soil, he says. Cream of the crop psychology in a match that just flies by despite nearly going an hour. Chops that just echo throughout the arena. What the match lacked in eventual box office metrics, the two artists made up for a millionfold of putting on a masterpiece for the ages. His second choice is Eddie Guerrero vs. Rey Mysterio from Halloween Havoc 97. Probably the greatest juniors match to ever take place on North American soil before the launch of the indies in the 21st century. Eddie was on fire here as a rudo asshole, complete with flawless body language and facial expressions. Of course, the picture-perfect high spots were breathtaking, and the highlight of the match has since become iconic, that being Mysterio's springboard moonsault DDT. And his third and final pick is the Cage of Death match between Team ROH and Team CZW from Death Before Dishonor 4. This was everything that we asked for in Feud Enders. This match truly had it all. Timing, progressing other arcs, staying true to the characters, an absurd fuckton of unforgettable spots, peaks and valleys, swings of momentum, a moltenly passionate, white-hot, divided audience, and a moment that had been 11 months in the making. This match perfectly wrapped up the greatest feud in company history with a genuine climactic moment. This match progressed not only ROH's own Danielson vs. Joe feud, but Hero vs. Kingston as well, a program that had zero to do with ROH. This match had all the brutality that the audience expected. It also put Homicide in the position that the fans demanded, this being his final step in making him the number one babyface in the promotion, far above Samoa Joe or even Kenta. This will go down as the greatest booking orchestration of Gabe Sapolsky's career. Words cannot express how badly I wish I got to experience this masterpiece live in person. He wasn't the only person to vote for that one, but I actually quite like that. Not necessarily I wouldn't pick it myself, but I do that match, I like it a lot, and in terms of being that definitive blow-off feud ender and something that meant a lot at the time in 2006 is ROH's best year ever, in my opinion. I think it's the best year they ever had, just from every year, from all across the board. And that's a big part of it. The ROH-CCW feud war was tremendous.
I would agree completely with regards to Ring of Honor in 2006. I don't own a stack load of ROH DVDs, but it's one of the ones I do own, and it's nice you get a little recap as one of the bonuses on the DVD to sort of take you through the feud. It is wonderful booking. I am a huge fan of the way that Danielson doesn't necessarily turn on ROH, but gives Joe the old chop block, because he has a world title match coming up with Joe, and the world title means that much to Daniel Bryan. I love that bit of booking.
Yeah, it means that
just
much
how
more
important that belt is. But it's a wonderful way to bookend the feud. You mentioned before about crowds, G, and I think it's noticeable with the three that this email has chosen. Two of them, I think the crowd does play an element to it. The ROH-CZW match, because you have competing fans, it almost has that football environment that we're accustomed to in this country.
A dueling audience that is far more authentic and passionate than the Let's Go Cena sucks that most fans would be accustomed to now. This is a completely different level of intensity.
This is no Pavlovian response. This is passion from an audience. And with regards to the other match, Steamboat Flair, now I like the 2 out of 3 falls match. It's not my favourite of the three they had in 89.
Which is, just as out of interest, very quickly.
The first one.
Chi-Town Rumble.
Chi-Town Rumble is my favourite of the three. But this is one where I think the crowd hurts it. they emailed their reference about box, lack of success at the box office, and mentioned about chops echoing.
Yeah.
Well, the reason the chops were echoing was because it was at the Superdome. There was about 4,000 people there. I enjoy the match, but I think the crowd does hurt it a little bit, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I just want to talk about the Mysterio Eddie Guerrero match, because Guerrero and Mysterio, at their best physically, I can't think of many more matches where, from a physical standpoint, in terms of execution of moves, two people who are so more in sync with one another, like the spots alone. The one that I just pop every time is when he does the freaking flip to the outside. Guerrero catches him, but he reverses into Hurricanrana. That, I think, they could have tried that again 20 more times straight away, and they wouldn't have hit it as well as they did. Rey's got to be one of the perfect baby faces you can work with. Everything that you do on him looks amazing. And Guerrero is just greasy, cheesy, fucking heel god in this. He's just like, Guerrero just finds his niche, his mid-card niche for now. He finds his main event niche a lot later on. But this is just two guys just completely in sync. A great match.
This vied really hard for my third slot, and actually, I can't really fault the match at all in any degree. I love everything about it. The reason it didn't make it was because I stayed at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas, and my flight to leave was 2 days before this show.
Oh.
And I saw all the advertising. I knew what was coming. And, I mean, it was a family. I was quite young, you know. It was a family holiday. And I was there staying at the MGM Grand, where it took place, and I left 2 days before. And I have an element of bitterness that if my holiday was just like, because there were fucking tickets available, I could have got tickets 2 weeks before when I was, you know, all that time. Yeah, I could have got tickets if my flight had just been like 2 days later. It's like, that's why it never made my list, ironically. Everything else I fucking love about it.
Have you punished your family for that?
It's still coming.
Beast on Pro Wrestling Only with three completely different candidates as Bret Hart versus Mr. Perfect from SummerSlam 91. Ooh. Probably the match I've seen the most, since both are in my top five favourites. They work so well together, and Heenan, Piper, Monsoon are perfect on commentary. Perfect never looked better in WWF, and it's such an important match for Hart's growth as a performer and star. His second pick is Edge and Rey Mysterio versus Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit from No Mercy in 2002. Was going to go with Angle and Mysterio from SummerSlam, but instead went with a much longer tag match. Perfect timing and possibly the peak of the SmackDown 6 run. And his third and final pick is Owen Hart versus Davey Boy Smith from Raw in 1997. I believe this is the match he's referring to is the one from Germany when Davey wins the European title. He says, more perfect chemistry, Bulldog is able to pull out a lot of his more older, agile movements, and Owen is right there to counter. So three completely different picks. Bret and Perfect, I'm tempted by that one.
Yeah,
I won't lie.
It was really close to
mine. Ditto the tag now I think about it.
Yeah, I think a lot of the classic matches that have come up in the past sort of three or four people's recommendations, I just wasn't watching at the time, and that therefore this is a classic match that belongs in the breath with those, but I actually saw it. And I remember as a kid, I mean, what, Bret's poor parents, you know, like I was watching it thinking about the fact that they were there and having to watch him sort of get.
And that's just because Al Haes pulled the microphone away.
I was just literally. Al Haes' microphone. I was, you know, totally gripped by it, and it, fantastic. It would have been in extended to 5 or to 8, it would have absolutely been a contender. Just didn't make it for me for other matches.
SummerSlam 91, I think it was certainly something I went over. I found Bret to be the hardest person to really nail down, at least as I was trying to get to what the three would be. Again, I have to put my hand up again, because the No Mercy 2002 was certifiably my second choice of the three. You're getting a good bargain here with like four great wrestlers: Angle, Benoit, Edge, and Mysterio. And I'll probably go, I guess it's probably arguable, I would say 2002 for most of them was probably the best year, or one of their better years. I'm thinking mainly for Angle and Edge, I think, from an in-ring physical aspect. Obviously they would all go on to like certain title wins and so on, but I think it's a fucking amazing match. I was watching it again on Monday, and I just went right back to when I first saw this match, where you're watching it and the crowd are completely into it and they're just working their asses off, and they get to the bit where Edge tags in Rey for the hot tag, and everybody's standing up and they're doing all the close falls, and the crowd are like, they're just completely behind this, going like, this is awesome, I can't wait to see what the finish is. And then this slow realization of like, oh, we're only halfway through the match. Like, we still got to get through the bit where Ray gets worked over and Edge gets a hot tag. And even though there's still half a match left, nobody sits back down. They stand for the entire match. The one spot I always think is great is where Edge throws Ray onto Kurt, who's on the top rope, to do the Hurricane Rana. As he goes for a pin, Benoit goes for the diving headbutt to try and stop him, but they move, and so Benoit just lays out Angle. And like, the crowd are just like, crowd and me, everyone's just watching this going, that's the fucking finish, that's great. They outsmarted the two technical wrestlers. Kicks out. You're just going fucking mad. I'm just watching it, and watching it again on Monday, I was just fucking losing my mind. I already know what happens. I was going to say, oh, this is when Kurt Angle comes in, hits the Angle Slam. I knew it, but I was fucking still losing my mind over it. It's just like four guys, top of their game, just showing how it's fucking done. Put it in the bag, zip it up, it's done.
Ryan Pelley on Wrestling Forum, his three, says Bret Hart versus Steve Austin. Also goes with two other ones that haven't been mentioned so far. Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker from Bad Blood in 97. While there are a few matches I enjoy more than this, if I'm going to be stuck with only three matches, I want some variety. All things considered, for being a bloody, gruesome gimmick match, this match is damn near perfect. Certainly one of the few I cannot get tired of. And his third pick is Edge and Christian versus the Dudleys versus the Hardys from WrestleMania 17. Much like the last pick, this isn't in my top three matches, but variety. One match, technical and storytelling excellence. The next one, step away from technical and a lot more hardcore, and this one is a huge step towards exciting chaos. So again, he's gone for the mixed bag there. Shawn and Taker, Bad Blood 97 is right on the fringe of the matches I would take, because I want a great Shawn Michaels match if I'm going, and I think that he or Shawn at the end of 97 is probably my favourite Shawn Michaels that there's ever been. Even though he's had other periods of being awesome, I love this match. I've watched this match countless times. I think it's one of the best cage matches ever. I think it might be the best cage match ever. This is a strong contender for me. Slicky Tricky Damon on TPWW also says the 1992 Royal Rumble, with a tear in my eye, it's the greatest match in the history of the WWE. His second choice is Bayley versus Sasha at NXT TakeOver Brooklyn, because I was there and bore witness to the greatest women's wrestling match in WWE history. Two of the most over talents coming together on a huge stage, and not only stealing TakeOver, but stealing SummerSlam from The Undertaker and Brock Lesnar. Perfect match with action, story, and enough time to tell it all. The four horsewomen at the end with Corey Graves finally giving Bayley her props. Best colour guy in WWE right now. Third match is one that I do agree with, Shawn Michaels vs. Kurt Angle from WrestleMania. Just a great match by two of the best in the history of the business. Great old-fashioned grudge match. Great use of the drama of the ankle lock and the pain HBK was feeling. Great acting, making us feel like the ankle lock was the biggest pain in the world. Great match on the grandest stage of them all. Mr. WrestleMania versus the Olympic gold medalist. And that's another one that's on the fringe from me. I'm taking a Shawn match, and this is one that rivals the better Shawn Michaels match. I love this match. I think this is a completely underrated match.
I think it's definitely a sleeper when people talk about great WrestleMania matches. It doesn't necessarily get mentioned in the same breath.
I don't know
breath.
Why.
And I think it certainly deserves to be.
Maybe because it doesn't mean that much in the long term.
I suppose, yeah, and it's not the end of the feud, really. It does carry on a bit further, so maybe that plays a little bit of a part in it. Bayley Sasha, I got to talk about this because it is a very good match. Don't get me wrong, it is a very good match. This notion of the four horsewoman bit adding something to it, it's so contrived. It's not really built in the story prior to it. Before the little video package, the VT, before the start of the match, people aren't aware of the four horsewoman. Yeah, that self-congratulating pat on the back at the end where Sasha breaks character and hugs her and is a babyface, only to then instantly be a heel the following week. This is just something that's never sat well with me.
Yeah, I'm kind of in agreement. I don't like... The thing is you've got to consider the audience. If this was on Raw, then yeah, I go with it wholeheartedly. Because it's NXT and it's the self-contained audience bubble anyway, it's less offensive to me, but I still don't particularly like it. It's not really what I look for in is like these kind of real-life references that kind of take you out of the moment, and you think, oh, what a great performance that was by the actors involved. It's like the actors in the play taking a bow at the end, and I don't really like that, to be quite honest.
You're absolutely right in that they weren't acknowledged as four horsewomen on TV, and I'm speaking from outside the bubble here, because while I did watch the match, and it was great, I wasn't exactly following a lot of the stuff leading up, because a lot of the stuff leading up, really, especially with the four horsewomen stuff, it wasn't wrestling stuff. It was people who had seen them together as friends on, you know, Instagram and Twitter and that kind of thing. And I can totally understand, not only obviously if you're there it changes everything, I can absolutely allow anyone to put any match on there if you were there, because it matters to you, and that's fair. But more so, like I say, if you're in that bubble of following these friends make their way into NXT and beyond through Facebook, through Twitter, this is a very new thing. Okay, and I could totally see you having a much closer appreciation of them as people, not just as performers. And so the congratulatory thing doesn't offend me in any way there. Whereas annoyingly the click does, strangely, because there was no opportunity for the audience to appreciate that. You didn't have a way of seeing those people as people back then, per se. The people in that audience at that time, because it was NXT, because it wasn't just a Raw with loads of kids and so forth, because the people who turned up at the NXT show probably were watching them on Twitter, probably, you know, and Instagram and all that, and really knew what was going on and why it mattered, I think that you could absolutely feel that. And feeling that is what I think so much of these lists are going to be about.
Wyatt Sheepmask on the UK fan forum says Warrior vs. Savage, and also CM Punk vs. John Cena for Money in the Bank 2011. A red hot crowd who are actually invested in what's going on, rather than busting out dual chants for no reason, can really enhance the overall experience of a match, and that is exactly what happened here. The pop at the end is like a football match for Punk winning the big one in his hometown. It also shows how great John Cena can be when he wants to be, which thankfully has been most of the time since this match. And his third pick is The Undertaker vs. Brock Lesnar from WrestleMania 30. I know this may sound like a daft choice to most, but it's purely down to the result and the significance. When the three count happened, I sat bolt upright from my couch and actually shouted, "Holy fuck!" The Streak, a pro wrestling attraction that took on a whole life of its own, seemingly by accident, and the one constant in wrestling since I started watching in 91. Everything that happened after and changing the industry in that time, the Streak was always there. And then, just like that, it wasn't. The match itself isn't particularly great due to Taker getting dropped on his bonce early in the match, but the intake of breath from the crowd and the moment of realization when the 21-1 graphic displays is still evidence of how great wrestling can be when it gets it right.
Well, as far as Taker Brock, I mean, it wasn't a good match, but I mean, I remember everybody, we were all here in this very room around this big oaken table. Yeah, I mean, I remember I was standing when it happened, and I don't remember standing up. I was just on my feet, and I don't remember standing up, and that's it. But I don't think you could recapture that. You're sitting on your desert island, you're watching the match back. It wasn't a good match, and I don't think, I've never watched that match back.
I've watched the ending back.
I suppose the next day, but I mean, you can see the expression in the crowd and you can try to capture how you felt that moment, but I don't think I could ever repeat it, which is why it wouldn't have passed to end up on my list. However, I will say that in that grouping was a match that is on my list.
Oh!
Mm. Now, I walked in here and I said to Liam on the way in, like, my third match is a bit in flux. I'm going to commit, and I think it is Punk Cena, because it will always remind me of a time, and a recent time, relatively speaking, when something fucking mattered in wrestling, when I was invested, as he says there. It mattered, and I gave a shit, and I wasn't sure what the finish was going to be. Yeah. I could see it going either way. And, you know, even, you know, it took a little while after it happened, instead of me being immediately going, they're going to fuck it up, and they did. But, you know, saying, and they're going to fuck it up, to just sitting back and thinking of the possibilities.
Yeah.
And... like when, you know, Brock squashed Cena. I've spoken about that in the past. It's sitting back and thinking of the possibilities.
Well,
of
if
what
they've
could come
gone
from
this
it.
Far,
will yeah,
how far
and,
could they go?
And it mattered, and it just opened up. The future opened up from this tiny little line that Vince is going to walk his company down to this huge spreading tree, this valley that you can look down. Of like, they could go anywhere. They could go anywhere from here, and this is going to be fucking amazing. Of course they screwed it up.
They went to the outhouse.
three weeks later, along come the Lumberjacks.
And I could still sit back. If I went to a desert island, sat back and watched that match, it still opens up. And I can still sit back and think of how it could have been. And I think that's a gift that match gives that not many others do.
I love that pick.
With Taker, Lesnar, you know, none of us are going to pick it for sort of a match quality as such. But I can appreciate why he's picked it. I mean, we've all seen that much wrestling around the table. And whilst I possibly come across as the most jaded round here, I think it's fair to say we all have a level of cynicism to us when we're watching our wrestling. And there are very few moments that genuinely shock us. And that did.
Yeah.
So I can see why someone would pick that.
I was going to say that more to Luke's point as well. The whole thing was, you knew that this was the finish they did was the finish you actually desperately wanted to do, but you knew that was the one they weren't going to do because, well, Punk's leaving, so they're not going to do that. And then they did it anyway, and it was like, that's what opened the forest, as Luke says.
And that one again, it goes back to, we talked before about the Pavlovian response to Cena, and it had taken on a life of its own before this match. That's Let's Go Cena Sucks chant was very prevalent. But on that night, in front of that crowd in Chicago, it wasn't that Pavlovian response again. It was a passionate response, a visceral response for the hometown guys. It was a fantastic spectacle.
Killjoy G on the UK fan forum says, long time listener, first time contributor. Keep up the excellent work. Many a time have I burst into laughter at you guys on the bus and made a complete tit out of myself. Thank you very much. His number one match that you mentioned is Punk versus Cena, just to keep up with the continuity. While it may not have moved numbers, July 4th being the obvious reason, the week after the pipe bomb was essential viewing for me and my housemates, who rarely stayed up for Raw due to being at work early the next day. But with the Austin guest hosting, we did. We very nearly gave up, and then that pipe bomb. We were sat in silence for ages following the bomb and had to tune in weekly without fail. Money in the Bank was the first night we stayed up for a pay-per-view since Mania, and I've never felt more electric when watching a match with zero idea how it would end. The crowd, the story, the action, it was perfect, and one of the few matches I've been able to rewatch from the modern era that still holds up. Pure magic. His second pick is TLC 1. This was the match that made me a wrestling fan, and yes, 2 is better, but still, just a phenomenal match that I'll watch again and again and still get caught up for. I long for the day that tag team wrestling is this hot again, such a fantastic match. Pick number 3, Steven Richards versus Tyson Tomko from Unforgiven 2004.
I'm glad someone else brought this up.
Only joking, although a good candidate for a match you wish to exile to a desert island.
Chris, we've got an idea for another show.
Yes. His actual number 3 is Benoit versus Jericho from the Royal Rumble 2001. I know, it's a second ladder match, but what a story. And even though it features He Who Must Not Be Named and Chris Benoit, it is perhaps one of the best matches I've ever seen. That chair shot, which is perhaps bad taste knowing what Benoit's brain was like. The walls of Jericho on the top of the ladder, such amazing visuals. That was what me and my mates discussed in the playground the next morning, not China. Love the podcast and keep up the good work, guys.
Interestingly, the Jericho-Benoit match was actually, at one point, I think it might have been Liam, somebody asked me what my favourite match was, and that was the one that came to mind. Now, this is many, many years ago, easily 10 years ago. But I watched it back recently, and it's the first time something really put me off a match. It's like I can still watch Chris Benoit matches. I've said this on the podcast before. I've got no problem with that. But there is that chair shot in there. There is a couple of things, and it's like it. And it is the first time I've watched something back like that and found it a little distasteful. And that worries me that that's going to spread into other things I watch. But yeah, that was once certainly my single favorite match of all time, and that has fallen to me.
I will actually disagree there. I do, not with you. I mean, I personally think
fuck you then.
No, with the listener when he said he thinks TLC 2 is better. I actually think the first one's better.
Yes.
Yeah, I think the first one's better for me.
Yeah,
too.
Definitely.
Don't make me choose.
I know. I personally think the first one's better.
SummerSlam.
SummerSlam. To me, it's a better match. Just the crowd heat's better. B. Papa from F4W says, if I'm going to a desert island, I'll probably take matches with Skinner, Umaga, and Kamala in order to best get myself in the mindset for living life as a hunter-gatherer. Air Raid on the UK fan forum says, I've not exactly taken my 3 favourite matches or even 3 from my top 5, as I've tried to tick as many boxes as possible through my choices. I've tried to get as many of my favourites involved and also hit 3 different eras of my wrestling fandom, and 2 of my choices have the length of match involved as a factor too. Number 1 being the 1992 Royal Rumble. His second choice is the Canadian Stampede main event 10-man tag. Bret Hart was my favourite wrestler from my first day as a wrestling fan, and this match stands out in my memory. It warmed my heart to see him and his guys get to be the heroes, and as a lengthy match that stays compelling throughout while also giving an outstanding performance from Stone Cold. This was an easy pick from one of my favourite time periods as a wrestling fan. Again, I've gone for a match chock full of performers I love watching, enjoyable interactions, and the right ending. I still get excited watching the Hart Foundation entrances, well, 4 of them, to this day. Love the look on Owen's face as he comes out to thunderous cheers. Love that he got to win the fall. Love that Stu is involved. Plus those 3 lasses in the crowd that love a bit of Shamrock that always tickles me. Bruce being a prick as always too. I just love this match. And his pick number 3 is Shinsuke Nakamura versus AJ Styles from Wrestle Kingdom 10, which just happened on January 4th. Yeah. I'm just throwing it out there, I love New Japan. For several years, it's been a favourite promotion. My favourite native during my time following the company closely has been Nakamura. We have that in common. Conversely, AJ Styles has been my favourite wrestler on and off for much of the last 14 years, and wrestling Shinsuke was a dream match for me from the moment he first showed up in New Japan. That they only wrestled each other the once adds extra significance, of course, but if I'm only getting to watch 3 matches for the rest of my life, I'm hardly going to neglect New Japan. And with this match, I get to have a fix of both Nakamura and of AJ. I'm so relieved they got to do this match in New Japan the one time before they left. You can tell me they might wrestle each other in WWE until you're blue in the face, it won't be the same. I've kind of got that similar urge to put a Japan match in there just for that multi-flavour of wrestling. And I love Shinsuke Nakamura, I love Kenta Kobashi. I want to pick a match with one of those two guys as my third, I think. Yeah, hell of a choice.
First off, I personally think Nakamura versus Ibushi was better than the Styles match. If I was to have put a New Japan match in there, I may have leaned more towards an Okada Tanahashi match. I'm thinking Invasion Attack
2013.
Yeah, where Okada wins his second title. But saying that, at no point did I even consider putting a New Japan match in my three. The reason why is, whilst I'm a massive fan of New Japan, as like being the other resident fan here along with yourself, Liam, I don't know whether it's the fact that I didn't grow up on it. I didn't even start watching any Japanese wrestling until 2004. And thinking of like what matches I was going to pick, I picked three American matches overall, just because those are the ones I've kind of grown up with and I'm more connected to that style.
We move now to Lockjaw on TPWW forums, who says, for his first match, Christian versus Alberto Del Rio from Extreme Rules 2011, because it was the greatest moment in the history of our sport. Obviously a big Christian fan there. Daniel Bryan versus Randy Orton versus Batista from WrestleMania 30 is his second match. Maybe it's because emotions are still running high on this one, but really felt moved by Daniel Bryan accomplishing this. WWE finally giving fans something they wanted, changing plans and making an epic moment. And his third pick is Bret Hart versus Steve Austin from WrestleMania 13. This is a really tough question. Ask me again 5 minutes later and my answers would probably change. It has gone very highly on the emotional standpoint there for the Christian world title win and the Daniel Bryan WrestleMania moment.
Yeah, and I think that for me that's quite important, because that's what I wanted from my matches, was matches that have made me sort of have an emotional reaction when I watched them originally. And actually, you know what, I didn't even think of it at the time, but that Daniel Bryan one could probably be up there. We all watched it together, as we alluded to earlier with the Taker match. The only thing I always remember about that match is it was a great moment, but man, we were all still reeling from the Taker thing. Like, you know, if it hadn't have followed that, I think we'd have probably all remembered it more fondly. But people would have just been hit with a sledgehammer.
We move to Rookie of the Year from WrestlingForum.com. It says, we would need a mix of match types for sure. I wouldn't choose only the greatest wrestling matches, maybe one good technical match and two gimmicky ones. He goes for Brock Lesnar versus Kurt Angle in the 60-minute Iron Man match from SmackDown. There's a misconception. I think it comes from people who didn't see Brock's original run, that all he brings to the table is Suplex City. This proves he's much more, as well as being a match from my favourite wrestler, is my favourite Iron Man match in general. His second pick is the Elimination Chamber from the Survivor Series 2002, the first one. It's rare in gimmick matches that the original is the best, but I believe that to be the case with the Chamber. Most gimmicks get more creative as time went on, but I feel like the wrestlers went all out here, then afterwards went, fuck, maybe we should tone this down a bit. RVD was great, maximising his minutes. Triple H was a trooper going through injury, and Shawn Michaels completed his heroic comeback. And his third and final match here, again another gimmicky one, Team Austin versus Team Bischoff from Survivor Series 2003. I love the traditional elimination tags, and HBK had one of his career best performances here. Big call, I know, but it was so bloody and dramatic. The stakes were high with Austin's career on the line, and Randy Orton performed exceptionally well given his rookie status.
Bischoff as well being particularly fantastic.
Yeah,
as
ringside.
As just a smarmy fuck in this match.
Austin on the floor is like grabbing the ropes at every near fall, and he's living on edge. It's brilliant.
Yeah, I would say, you know, if we talked about wrestling Shakespeare, this is just great wrestling theatre, full stop. Like, you know, there's so much of it is told around the ring and in reactions and things like that. I don't remember a massive amount about the actual match, like the moves or the sequences. I remember all the drama.
Shawn Michaels' drama at the end.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the standout for this. Yep. Just covered in blood, hitting that super cat nowhere on Christian, beating Christian, beating Jericho, having Orton beat, and then the rug pulled out at the end. And
fantastic.
Austin's plus I just love the moment when Austin just comes in and just shells Bischoff and then gives Orton a stunner and leaves his ass up in the air.
I'd probably give that match the award so far for the best suggestion I hadn't thought of. Like, you know, that would, you know, seriously become a contender in my maybe top 10 that I haven't thought about it for years. So that's a great example
on the Iron Man match, because I think that's a bit like the Michaels Angle one. I think it's a bit of a forgotten gem, maybe because it's on a TV taping, it's not at a big show as such. But I'm generally speaking not someone who's really a fan of the Iron Man concept.
Neither.
Simply because I feel like it telegraphs a lot to me. But I think as far as Iron Man matches go, that's certainly the best. I think it does showcase Angle and Lesnar in a brilliant light. And I think one that doesn't get its just due.
Yo-Yo's Roomie on Pro Wrestling Only says the Hart Foundation versus Austin, Goldust, Shamrock and the LOD. I mentioned it in the Hart Austin feud thread that this is my favourite time to be a wrestling fan, and it was really the absolute zenith of that period for me. So everything about this was pretty much perfect, from the incredible crowd, I love them losing their shit for Pillman's dirty cheating, the story that plays out, the post-match celebration, and the fact that the good guys won, of course. At this time, I had a friend of mine who taped wrestling for me, and I vividly remember sneakily staying up past my bedtime on a school night to finish watching this match, and just being so happy that my guys won. I couldn't not have this match available to watch. He also votes for Ultimo Dragon vs. Shinjiro Otani. I think this was the first Otani match I ever saw, and I was immediately a huge fan. So easy to get caught up in his personality, not to mention his incredible execution. I consider this to be pretty much a perfect match, the high point of the New Japan Junior style, another great crowd, and you just can't beat the first time you saw one of your favourites, which Otani definitely is. And his third pick is Blue Panther vs. Villano 5 in a mask vs. mask match. I've only seen it once, but I just had so much fun with this, and it's rare that I watch a new match now and just mark out so unabashedly. This just blew me away, from Perito's second work to Panther's barrage of dives to the surprising, to me at least, finish, and it doesn't hurt to have some lucha with me, does it? Some good mix up there with a personal experience of seeing Otani for the first time, but a lucha in there is good. I actually didn't give the 10 man from the Stampede it's just due earlier on when Air Raid mentioned it, because that's what I'm thinking of, because I love that match too.
Well, it's between that and Punk Cena for me for the best main event to what you would consider a B pay-per-view in company history. I think it is fantastic. But if I'm not mistaken, is that the first lucha mention of the podcast?
I believe so. Tom Campbell on the Facebook page, a Rolls Royce of a human being,
says
Shawn Michaels versus Mankind at Mind Games 96, an energetic, fun match with two guys that had something to prove. Plus, I always see something different every time I watch it. His second pick is AJ Styles versus Chris Daniels versus Samoa Joe at TNA Unbreakable. The halcyon days of Impact Wrestling, highlighted by one of the crispest three-way matches in history. And his final pick is the six-man Armageddon Hell in a Cell match from 2000. Wow. They only did one, but it's been in every wrestling game ever since. Not a Daniel Bryan-esque tour de force, but a spectacle nonetheless. Fun chaos, which very much serves as a timestamp of 2000, which is a great point, because 2000 is one of the most fondly remembered years in wrestling history, and again, you got the that Royal Rumble element of cramming a bunch of guys you like.
Yeah, no doubt about it. The sort of lineup in it is fantastic, but I can never forgive the dump truck full of straw that gets back down of the cage. I just remember that moment taking me way out of it. I was quite heavily reading WrestleZone.com at the time, and it had promised click here for more for rumours that a pedigree through the top of the cage that was then going to break through the ring was going to happen, so I was well disappointed by the straw truck.
Oh, those old headlines from the internet. Yeah, Goldberg seen backstage at Raw, click here.
The clips were there as well.
Yeah. some a couple of great choices by Tom there. The Mind Games, mainly because I was trying to think like, oh, what's a great Mick match? I might want Foley in this three, because you can't go wrong with a bit of Foley. And also, you know, I think it's I think it might be one of my favourites, if not my favourite Foley match. It's kind of up there with the Autumn one, and I think this is hands down my favourite Michaels match as well. I think just these two had great chemistry, which is like really surprising. I don't know why. I don't know what it is about those two, but it didn't come across like those two would work well together, but they did. And I don't recall, you'll probably correct me, Meltzer, whether like those two actually wrestled each other again in a one-on-one.
Yeah, they did it on Raw in August 97, but not with the same length. This is like a 27-minute match. The only, again, one of the downfalls, I fucking hate the finish of the Mind Games match. I think it sucks. Veo, the fucking Vader, the slowest running this side of Papa Shango at WrestleMania 8, followed by the worst punches ever by Psycho Sid to chase him to the back. Like, the finish stinks this up a little bit for me, but the match is great. The match is awesome.
Come on, it's not his fault. He's a fat piece of shit.
Fair point.
Look at me,
so big.
Can't wait to get to that in the timeline. I'm gonna have a hissy fit over that. This match is just ferocious. Shawn definitely brought the kind of athleticism out of Foley a lot more, and I think Foley kind of brought like a kind of aggressive nature of Shawn Michaels, rather than just being like, you know, the toy boy or whatever. Shawn really kind of got over this. This was for me like, you know, when we talk about Mick and we say like, oh, he always helped people move to like the next level, you know, and you mention Orton, Edge, Triple H, Rock and so on. I think to an extent you could mention Shawn in that as well. Not that he helped Shawn move to like the next level, but I think he like helped Shawn find like a different Like string to his bow from like a more hardcore style.
I think that's overplayed, to be quite honest. I think the fact that he gets booed 2 months later against Sid of all people goes to show that it didn't really help him that much at all. Don't get me wrong, it's a fantastic match, but I mean he had Shawn Michaels having a great match. He had a great match with Davey Boy at King of the Ring, great one with Vader at SummerSlam, great one with Mankind here. He had a great 96. I don't think if you take this match away, Shawn Michaels' career trajectory changes that much at all.
I think people sleep on the Diesel match as well.
Absolutely, that's a cracking match. I love that match. But again, not to take anything away from Mind Games and what it accomplishes, it is super. It's fantastic
awesome
match. John C. Haddock on Facebook says, "Holy shit, hey. Softball here, huh, guys?" Yeah, it goes for Bret Hart versus Mr. Perfect at SummerSlam 91, and two Shawn Michaels picks here. Shawn Michaels versus Triple H from SummerSlam 2002. The chance to see Shawn Russell for the first time in 4 years was enough of a sell, but the added intrigue of if it would be the same as he was before, would he be worse? Was this a one-time deal and could his back take it? All of this makes up for just a small part of the story Shawn told that night between those ropes. I've never seen before or since a better example of how to tell a story in a wrestling match. He got us hook, line, and sinker. But we know how this match turned out. Was he as good as before? No. The jammy Git was better. He was better than better. He was from that return match to his last, the best wrestler in the world. And his third pick is Shawn Michaels versus Razor Ramon from WrestleMania 10. I remember staying up to watch this and being blown away. The most exotic match I've seen before this was the two-ringed War Games match from WCW. And then came along Shawn and his ladder. Or Shawn and Bret Hart's ladder, if you believe him. This match changed how I looked at wrestling as a child. I just remember sitting in awe at moves that I'd never seen before. Baseball sliding into the ladder to hit the guy on the outside. Shawn standing on the top rope and using the ladder as a pendulum and landing on Razor's ribs. The leap from the top of the ladder, I could go on. This might not stand up to some of the crazy stuff that would follow in later ladder matches, but as my personal genesis to the concept, I don't think there's a finer example. Two great picks there that are jousting to get on my final three.
Yeah, absolutely. Literally, this has become crunch time now because as we've been sitting here, my list has changed in and out, in and out as we're talking. But one that was always a contender was this 2002 return match for Shawn. I remember everything about this match just feeling that bit more special, that bit more intense, right down to, and I always swear there's got to be some deliberate point in this. On the Raw or possibly the SmackDown before, Shawn goes to hit like an over the top plancha and catches his leg and like botches it. And I remember thinking at the time, oh no, he's not good.
He's not going to be the good. Same as before.
He's, you know, he can't even hit a plancha. He hasn't done anything for it. And then you go into that match and it works from his from the minute he walks out in his little Bible T-shirt with its Corinthians reference on. Yeah. It's all the way through everything about it. To you know the chaps on the top of the jeans, like everything hints at HBK, but it makes you go, but he hasn't even got property, you know. But everything about it, once the bell starts,
we talked
just fab.
We talked about this on the best SummerSlam matches of all time. Yeah. This was the this was number one on our cumulative vote as it ended up, and we talked about that match at length there. So again, you can go back in the archives at squarecirclegazette.com as we break that match down on a much deeper level. But certainly, final three material for some people, and I'm on the list of being very close. Is this on yours, Halter? Yeah,
number two for me. Rumble and this are my. I'm concreting them in number one and two.
Makes me think though. Every time I hear that, Shawn hadn't wrestled for 4 years. Is it just me, or did it feel like a lot longer as a kid? It felt like Shawn hasn't wrestled in forever because so much had changed at the time as well. I mean, it was that era where shit was really different than 4 years ago. And my brother's favorite wrestler was Shawn Michaels at the time, and he'd only really started watching wrestling not that like right at the tail end of Shawn Michaels' career. He did that commissioner shit. And he was excited about that. Never thought he was going to actually see him wrestle again. That kind of thing. If you weren't there, 4 years doesn't make it sound like what it felt like for anyone. I don't think.
Von Shogun 09 on the UK fan forum with a different one here says, obviously the Royal Rumble 92. I won't bother parroting what everyone else says other than put that cigarette out. War Games 92 is his new suggestion to the table. Had to include something from early 90s WCW as that's what's got me into wrestling in the first place pretty much. Anyway, this match has been wanked over enough on here over the years, and rightly so. You can't go wrong with a match of Sting, Steamboat, Wyndham, Rhodes and Koloff versus Rude, Double A, Beautiful Bobby,
oh, yes,
Larry Zbyszko and Stunning Steve, can you? Then, add in the War Games stip. Then a top performance from Paulie on the outside as the dastardly manager of the Dangerous Alliance.
He had a plan!
Add in the commentary of Tony Schiavone and Jesse the Body, who are great together. It wrapped up the Dangerous Alliance angle, too soon in my opinion, but whatever, created questions on what would happen next after the way it finished with Zbyszko, and everyone played their part just right. fucking perfect. Probably WCW's best match, and it's my favourite anyway. And the third one that he goes with is Bret Hart versus Steve Austin from WrestleMania 13. So War Games 92, a strong yeah. contender here. I love that match.
This, for me, hands down, well, at the very least, the best War Games.
That's, yeah.
It makes me want to watch it. I didn't think of it. It makes me want to watch it again just to see. It's War Games. And yes, there's been bad War Games.
but there's been
great ones, and this is like the best one. This is a concept that I just generally like. I think there's still money in it. That heel stable, just that's an awesome heel stable. Yeah. I'm sorry, Rude, Austin, Bobby Eaton, Larry, and Dad. with fucking Heyman, with his fucking plan sheet,
his blueprint,
telling people where he's gonna go, like it's a fucking football game. Just going, all right, you're gonna start, and then this is gonna happen.
Like Jose Mourinho, yeah. And his plans.
And just like the Medusas are climbing the cage and stuff. Just nuts. Just
close contender.
I need to watch it again.
Max Power on the UK fan forum says, I didn't get into wrestling until the Attitude Era, so I can't really take anything with me from pre-98, as I don't really have any emotional attachment to it. So I'll go with Rock vs. Austin at WrestleMania 17. I was willing Rock to keep kicking out at the end and was unaware that he was leaving to film whatever he went to film. As far as I was concerned, it's the two biggest stars I'd ever seen in wrestling, fighting in the main event of the biggest show I'd ever seen. Heyman on commentary with JR is fantastic too and adds a lot. He also picks Styles, Joe and Danielsman, Breakable and TLC 2, but Rock and Austin WrestleMania 17 is a match I've watched an awful lot of, and it's not one of those ones that immediately comes to mind when people talk about the best matches ever, but I think this is a massively underrated WrestleMania match, and there are very few matches that I've watched more and get more of a fuzzy feeling out of just because of the way wrestling was that week and all the craziness that was going on with WCW dying and everything that was happening. Austin's heel turn, it was just like, and granted, if you don't like it for the Austin heel turn, can't argue, but as a match, I think this is brilliant.
The Austin heel turn at the end of the match is the reason why it's not held in such a high regard, and I can understand that. We can all look back in hindsight and look at what a terrible decision it turned out to be. But bell to bell, it is a great match, and obviously the crowd does play its part again with it being in Texas. The commentary is fantastic, and I.
Oh, JR works so hard in that match.
JR works so hard, and it's one of those examples of where you notice just how stale and repetitive Lawler had become, because in his absence you get Heyman, who is brilliant throughout as well.
I think how rare it is that a replacement blows away the guy that's not only current but everyone actually had fond memories of at the time too.
That was his first pay-per-view, and I think it wasn't until Lawler comes back at the end of the year where people really appreciate just how good Heyman was in the role.
Dominator on TPWW chooses three pretty much time and place matches here. Very interesting choices. Bayley versus Sasha from NXT TakeOver Brooklyn. By far the greatest women's wrestling match in WWE. Yeah. It was truly a once in a lifetime spectacle to behold. Number two, Rock vs. Mankind, Survivor Series 98. Two of the greatest wrestlers of at least the last generation of pro wrestling, if not in the history of it, going one-on-one for the WWE's top prize. Throwing some amazing spots by both men, an extremely hot crowd, and one of the best swerve endings ever. What more do you need? And option number three he goes for here is Eddie Guerrero versus Kurt Angle from WrestleMania 20. Just about a month after Eddie shot the world and defeated Brock Lesnar at No Way Out for the title, he goes on and headlines WrestleMania 20 against one of the all-time greats, Kurt Angle, and put on an absolute clinic inside MSG, with great back-and-forth action from both men before Guerrero eventually wins to retain his title. Sets the bar very high for the night's other main event. Three interesting choices. I wouldn't go with either of them personally. Eddie and Angle, I like, but I don't like. When he mentions there that the night's other main event, I thought was a better match, to be quite honest.
I think the triple threat is a better match, and maybe I need to watch that match back, because I think a few emailers on previous shows have referenced that match and how good they think it is. And at the time, I've watched it a couple of times since, but many years ago. It's never really stuck out to me. Maybe it's because I have such high expectations
that's exactly
of the two individuals,
say.
And it suffers because of that.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the reason, but it's not one that I've ever really gravitated to.
Yeah. Rock Mankind from Survivor Series.
I never really think of it as a particularly stellar match. They certainly had better.
The only way that match probably makes it onto my top three is if we change the stip to top three shows. In which case, I would probably take Survivor Series 98 as a whole show. But I think that match standing alone, it just doesn't have enough for me. You
future
know,
version of Desert Island Jewels here.
That would
shows.
Be very different, yeah.
Batco10 from WrestlingForum.com says, this is really a tough question, but I'm already chomping at the bit to hear the podcast where the answers are reviewed. It really should be a good show. I am basing my picks on personal experience and nostalgic memories. Numero uno would be the NWA World Title match between Nature Boy Buddy Rogers and Cowboy Bob Ellis at Madison Square Garden on May 25th, 1962. I was going on 12 years old, and this was the first wrestling show I ever attended and a birthday present from my dad. We didn't have colour TV back in the day, and the first thing that struck me hard was the lighting and the colours. I always thought the NWA title belt was silver, when I found it was actually gold as Buddy Rogers strode past us at ringside with a belt strapped to his waist. The bout was the most exciting thing I ever saw in my young life. Rogers attacked Ellis from behind after the ref's instructions, only to be pummeled into submission by multiple bulldog headlocks and pinned in short order to lose the first fall. Buddy bounced back in the second fall to pin Ellis. In the third fall, the original Nature Boy locked in his figure four leg lock with Cowboy Bob Ellis had promised to break out of. Before 18,000 screaming fans, the two rolled out the ring with legs locked up and were counted out. Draw! Disappointing? Hell no, my adrenaline was pumping my heart so fast, my dad thought I was going to have a heart attack. The second would be the classic in Comiskey Park, where Rogers defeated Pat O'Connor to become the first heel to win the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. After 50 years, the world attendance record set by Gotch and Hackenschmidt in 1911 was broken in the same Comiskey Park venue, which is the only match of the three that I've seen. Last would be one of the most shocking matches I ever witnessed. Count Carl von Hess versus Abe Jacobs. Get this review. This one was televised on Capital Wrestling TV, either in 1959 or 1960. To the unanimous cheers of the fans, Jacobs, billed as the Jewish champion, entered the ring first, carrying an Israeli flag with the Star of David imprinted in it. Count Carl von Hess's entrance followed, and the Count Goose stepped around, giving the Nazi salute to the audience on all four sides of the ring. After the ref gave the combatants their instructions, von Hess whirled around as he was heading back to his corner and attacked Jacobs from behind. After beating him to a pulp, he wrapped the tag rope around his neck and put him in his finisher, the Hangman's Noose. Von Hess was disqualified, and a near riot erupted in the Washington DC arena. Fans tossed garbage and bottles into the ring as von Hess was escorted out by security guards. I don't remember exactly, but I think they went to a commercial break until things calmed down. I had never seen anything like this before, and never would see anything like it again if my mom wasn't busy with something and saw that match too. So, Nazi versus Jew war in 1960, apparently, with a hanging, the Nazi hanging the Jew in 1960. How far we've come.
I mean, looking around the table there, I think we all kind of went through the same things. Like, how do you comment on something so personal? But we were all grinning fucking ear to ear.
Yeah,
but,
that's a great story.
The thing is, you know, I want to say, I think I've said this before, but we have such eloquent listeners.
We got great listeners.
Because, I mean, honestly, it's like, I've done a few different podcast things, but I never had feedback that's just, fuck, man. I wish I could have been there for those. Yeah, all of those that sounded fucking great. They're half as good as you make out.
Yeah, sucks you in. Especially the Buddy Rogers stuff, which I would love to have been there live for.
Mazel tov.
Pits LF in the UK fan forum goes with Masaru and Kobashi versus Taue and Kawada from June 95, the match we mentioned before. Cena versus Punk at Money in the Bank, and his third pick is Funk versus Lawler in the Empty Arena match in 1981. One could argue this is more of an angle rather than a match, but I simply don't care. I personally rate Terry Funk above Ric Flair when it comes to the best 80s wrestler, and matches like this are my argument for that point. Funk's promo at the start, stating Lawler doesn't have the balls to turn up and fight him, is pure gold, and his selling at the end of the match might be some of the most convincing I've ever seen in a wrestling ring. You almost feel sorry for the psychopathic bastard.
My eye!
Great pick. I wouldn't put it in my list, but I, the thing is, I'm kind of battling, because I want some Funk, I want some Lawler on this on this excursion. I probably have fonder matches with both of them in.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say I'd go along those lines. I can think of better matches I've seen that have involved those two, but it's a fun angle. It's still, even though I'd seen the Empty Arena match with Rock and Mankind, this is a completely different animal. I think there's a much more serious tone to it, and
hey Chico, throw the rock apart.
Absolutely, and no sort of face shot as the crate lowers down towards him.
No,
either.
None of that.
But having even seen that as an Empty Arena match, then see the Lawler Funk one is still quite jarring, I think. But it probably is a bit more of an angle. But even so, what a great angle.
Yeah. King Pitgoss in the UK fan form says, I've gone for three that have tremendous nostalgia importance factor for me, as well as being dead good. He says, Rock versus Austin at WrestleMania 17, but it has to include the My Way build-up video. Undertaker versus Triple H from WrestleMania 28. It's up there with the best that either of them have ever done, and it's a phenomenal performance from Shawn Michaels. Three of the best birds of all time with one stone. And then his third pick is Edge versus John Cena from Unforgiven 2006, the iconic match from one of WWE's best ever rivalries.
I think if you're going to include the My Way video, you've got to have the follow-up of big up to my boys Limp Bizkit from Paul Heyman, where Paul Heyman goes street for just a couple of minutes.
How about a clip of the fan-made CD cover?
Made this cover.
I just made this picture.
Yeah, he was so weird, that guy.
Yeah, WrestleMania 28, Hell in a Cell taken Triple H. I was there for it live in person, but I'm not gravitating to that personally for a top three. I think both, again, actually, I prefer the one the year before. Yeah, the straight singles with the taken trips.
Yeah, you know, again, it's what makes some of these choices so subjective, and people don't have that much time to put them in. You know, a great match, and I think the circumstances in that. Going back to the Rock and Austin one, the more it gets mentioned, the more, you know, it is an absolutely great choice. I think, you know, a really rock solid choice. Probably most people were watching at that time as well. So, you know,
there are historical connotations to it as well. As Liam referenced before, it is a crazy week with the sale of WCW and having some WCW wrestlers up in the cheap seats.
All the way back there.
All the way back there. I think I can make out Lance. Chavo might be hovering in the background somewhere.
And meat.
It marks the end of the era in many respects as well. It's the end of the second boom. It's really the end of the Attitude Era as we knew it.
DCW on the UK fan forum says, Eddie Guerrero versus Brock Lesnar at No Way Out. Really good emotional build-up and match. Crowd were hot and the result was fabulous to unexpected teenage me. One of my happiest memories as a wrestling fan. Was delighted for Eddie. His second pick is RVD versus John Cena from One Night Stand. Match itself was middling, but the atmosphere and the way Cena handled the sheer hatred the crowd threw him was fantastic. A match that always brings a smile to my face. And his third and final pick is Kurt Angle versus Chris Benoit from the 2003 Royal Rumble. Just a phenomenal display of technical wrestling by both men, a match that I still find myself watching at least once a year, which is certainly just cause to take it on the desert island. I think that Guerrero Lesnar one I love as a pick far more than the Guerrero Angle one
that was my
previously.
Exact thought when that popped up. I thought to myself, well, actually I think I'd have taken that match. That match definitely has a personal moment for me in that earlier that week I watched, I think it would have been the first time, Flair versus Vader from
Starrcade 93.
Yeah. And I thought to myself, man, if you're going to do Lesnar versus Eddie, this is kind of the template for it, because it's got to have that struggling from underneath feel, and wow, that, you know, they pulled it off perfectly. It's certainly for me, because I was watching at the time, that match has more resonance than the Flair and Vader one, but following a similar-ish path, but yeah, a great, great match, and easily could have been a contender for me.
And I want to mention RVD Cena, actually, from, was it One I Stand 2, was that?
Yeah.
I mentioned this in passing to the guys before we went on air as something I didn't pick, because I don't care for the match, but if I, you know, I could sit and watch the entrances right up until the bell rings. I could sit and watch, you know, from the moment RVD enters right through, the moment they entered right through to the opening bell. I could watch that from now into eternity because everything about that was perfect.
Cena holding his head down with the belt in the air as he walks through the mass of people.
Throwing the t-shirt out and
the toilet roll comes flying
in. It was fucking great.
The black guy, Tony Lewis, in the like third row, just fucking giving Cena the business. It's awesome.
You do not fuck with that man.
Absolutely not. The third one there, Angle Benoit Rumble 2003, also deserves mention. It's a great, great, great match.
It is a brilliant match, and it's such a stark contrast to the Triple H Steiner match that had gone,
which did not get voted for, by the way.
I am actually shocked by shocking that, because I thought that was a better match.
So Hunter didn't post on this one.
No. Joe Ankovics on the Facebook page says the Royal Rumble 92. He also votes for the Armageddon 2000 Hell in a Cell match, and his third pick, which caught me off guard, was the Hart Family versus Shawn Michaels and Jerry Lawler's Goons from Survivor Series 93. I understand that Lawler was declared persona non grata after being charged charged with putting it where it didn't belong. False accusation, people. But I never understood why Michaels kept it up with three guys who were tooled for the King's gimmick. This match is just a lot of fun. Between the commentary team of Vince, Bobby Heenan, and Ray Combs from Family Feud. Yeah, he was there. And while not a stellar colour man, was clearly a lover of wrestling and gave it his all. Heenan's barbs towards the Hart family and Vince's accompanying outrage were golden. The match itself was solid, featuring Owen's first signs of brilliance. Also, Brett looks like a puss at the end of the match, and that amuses me. So, I'm not so sure about the Survivor Series one, although again, Heenan fucking with Stu Hart the whole match is quite great.
Yeah, it's a weird one. I don't think I would have put that Survivor Series match up there, mainly just due to the awkward nature of the Lawler replacement with Shawn and stuff, and they don't really fully explain it.
There has to be an element of personal nostalgia for him on that one, because as a match itself, I can't.
One thing I do remember about that was, I actually didn't mind Ray Combs in that. I thought at least he made an effort, you know, like at least it seemed like he did his research, you know, there was no Jeff Harvey situation going on there. At least it seemed like he might have it looks like he may have at least went and talked to the wrestlers that he was trying to help put over and so on. It seemed like he actually kind of knew what he was doing.
What about his intro work at WrestleMania 8 for the illustrious team of the Mountie, the Reaper Man, and the Nasty Boy? Is that fucking
every time
I hope he has some drugs for that.
every time I insult the man for that, I'm reminded that he's dead, so I'll keep my mouth shut on this.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, Carl. A real fucking Larry Zbyszko, Louis Spicoli thing there from you. Tremendous.
Oh, Drake Holmes dead?
Yes.
Damn, I was going to say that he could have put that line on his CV. Like, not a great colour man, but he definitely tried his best.
Paul C. on the FOW board says, Terry Funk versus Ric Flair, I quit match in Troy, New York. I won't argue that Funk Flair is a better match than any of the Flair Steamboat matches, but Flair and Funk is a better story. Flair and Steamboat is about Flair facing a clean-cut family man who's a better technical wrestler and ultimately winning Steamboat's respect. Flair and Funk is a story about what separates an amoral man from true evil. Evil in the form of a vindictive psychopath with the branding iron who tries to break Flair's neck, attempts to suffocate him with a plastic bag, and attempts to hospitalize Steamboat just to fuck with Flair. Hell, Funk actually barks out, "Remember the plane crash, Rick," during this match. In an 80s wrestling world filled with over-the-top cartoonish heels, Terry Funk was evil in a way that scared the crap out of me as a 10-year-old. This is the blow-off, and it's a glorious 20 minutes of violence. Also, I submit this as proof that, contrary to popular belief, Flair is a much better babyface than heel.
To steal the Terry Funk line, I can't make them believe that wrestling is real, but I can make them believe that I'm real. This was close. So close to making my three matches. You know, it came within a cunt hair, as Steve Austin would say. There's a barbaric nature to Funk's, to the way Funk is in the entire build-up and the match itself. The only thing he omitted there, which I thought was also fantastic, is the Flair press conference.
Oh, yeah.
Which is another little great piece of business, but it was a great match to follow on from the match they'd had at Great American Bash in 89, which I think is another brilliant one and could possibly even make a top 10 list for me of great matches. And if we ever do the podcast for three events, Bash 89 would certainly be a close contender as well.
Funny you say that, Carl, because that Great American Bash match I would put in my top three. It's in my three. It finishes off my three. And not only that, but it was the one I immediately put in there. Like, straight away. Didn't need to think about. I'm gonna pick this one over the I Quit. I'm gonna have it because of the whole package, if I can, of just, like, starting from the Flair promo just before the match, right through to the very end. The more I watch it, the more it's becoming my favourite thing ever.
In wrestling.
It has everything I love about wrestling and has nothing that I hate. And I absolutely agree with that with the guy when he says Flair is an amazing babyface. And we've argued this before when we were talking about better as babyface and heels. And I absolutely take on everybody's statements that they said the reason why he was a great babyface because he was honing off the fact that he was a really good heel. I agree with that. Still doesn't stop the fact that Flair as babyface was just gold. Flair plays this fucking perfect. Like, he's just so kind of like, he's not completely Flair-esque. He's saying the words that Flair should say, which is like, you know, oh, you haven't had a practice match, are you okay for this match? He goes, I believe I don't need to have a practice match, I'm at 110%,
but he's not saying it like Ric Flair.
He's not got the Flair conviction. Yeah,
he hasn't got the conviction. He's just saying it, and it's just a little bit of doubt in his eyes where it's like maybe Funk's in his head. And then you just get this outstanding match, and Funk is just heel. This is what everybody who's in wrestling needs to watch, because he gets his heat, he beats the son of a bitch who tries to break Rick's neck, but then as soon as Rick gets his hands on him and he's doing the old kind of like the little kind of like the neck snap on him, Funk's the first person to clench his neck and move over to the referee going, my neck, and he's just screaming at his neck as this Flair's just like laying knee drops on his neck. He's like, he's the first person to fucking cower when someone's doing the exact same thing to him. The blood in it as well, just like, obviously Flair's very used to blading and so on, it always looks great with the blonde hair, but just like when watching it, when Funk blades as well, he gets thrown into the ring post. He just hits it dead on hard, basically lies against it, and he looks alright, like from the camera, and goes right hand side is fine, but as soon as he pulls his head away, you just see the whole left hand side of his face is bleeding, and it's just, the camera shot looks fucking amazing. The match is amazing, only topped by the post-match angle,
which we talked about,
but finish was supposed to be, oh, they attack, you coming for a save, bad guys go to the back, end of the show. I think that whole rest of it was just impromptu, because like the look on Sting's face is, he's like, what the fuck's going on? But he's just like, Flair's just going, just chopping away at front, just going, just go with it, you know. Yeah. Just things like, oh, all right then, you know. Yeah. And you just keep going and going, and like JR's trying to like wrap up the show, he's just going, oh, I don't think this feud is gonna end anytime soon, and he looks behind him as Flair and Muta are still fighting, he's like, ah, the fight is still going on, you know. And it's just like, this is the best fucking thing ever. It's just at the end, that guy who started that match, the guy who had a little bit of doubt, is fucking gone. Flair's the fucking man, and Funk, you fucking run, cause he's gonna wear your Texas ass out. Woo!
Perhaps the most fanboyish thing I've ever heard on this show.
I'd like to note that G actually has the Ric Flair vein popping out of his head right now.
he's actually thrown his shoes into the sink in Flair fashion. We haven't even finished Paul Siebert's nominations here from the FLW Awards. The second one is Dean Malenko, Rey Mysterio, Great American Bash 96. The best mat wrestler in the history of WCW takes on the best high-flying underdog in WCW history in Rey's debut. An absolutely amazing piece of storytelling that's made more remarkable by the fact that Rey was pretty much unknown by the crowd. At one point, Tony Schiavone yells out, "We are witnessing one of the finest cruiserweight matches ever," and for once in his life, it wasn't hyperbole. His third pick is Kevin Steen, El Generico from Final Battle 2010. Much like the Funk Flair match, this is the blow-off a prolonged feud centered around hatred, and it's arguably the most compelling storyline that ROH ever produced. I remember watching this as a grown man in my 30s and being terrified that El Generico was going to be unmasked. It really speaks to how good a worker Sami Zayn is that he made what should be a one-gag character so enduring. How good is this match? Well, as good as Steen was during his scum run, I sincerely wish he never came back to ROH. Everything about this brutal match is so perfect, it could never be topped.
The Steen Generico thing, in particular, I fucking love the series, everything. It's really great. And one thing that had crossed my mind when putting the three matches together was the idea of putting three matches that become more than the sum of their parts. So taking three matches from a series like Steen Generico and taking one that represents the beginning, one in the middle, one at the end, and then on the island, you therefore have a story, a grander story beyond the matches. Liam had pointed out to me that the same could be said for Flair Steamboat. Certainly. Possibly the only reason I didn't end up doing that was because I didn't think it would be as interesting to talk about on the show.
Yeah.
That was that, the fun about one there in particular. Some good shit.
We, unfortunately, it is time to call time. We can hear the last call bell ring in the background. We've got so much feedback. We got so much feedback on this one that we are going to come back and do a part two in the near future, perhaps next week.
You're
going
to have
sure.
to charge me double. No, wait, pay me. Oh, fuck.
But what we will do here is to go around the table and talk about our final three, because we'll do the second part with Kieran here so that you can get to his final three as well. But to get to the final threes around the table, G, we've got yours, I believe. We've got Warrior Savage,
yeah,
Flair and Funk, the tag Rey match, and Angle. Benoit, Rey and Edge. Luke, give us your three.
Okay, so we've mentioned Punk and Cena, and I've explained why.
Yes.
My second was one that came pretty quickly. And that's Shawn Taker from WrestleMania 25.
Gotcha.
So very specifically that one. Because that is my self-conscious, epic, guilty pleasure almost. And I don't think that match can be justified as a guilty pleasure, but I almost feel like that's what it is to me. There's nothing I don't like in that match. That match, it could only have been done by those two guys, could only have been done at that kind of tail end of their career portion, and it is brilliant. 26 is one had a better lead up, but I think what broke it for me is they do very early in the WrestleMania 26 match, they do a tombstone on the outside, and it just killed my suspension of disbelief, and I couldn't get back into the match from that. I probably, but because of that fucking build, it was a very, very nice build. So yeah, Shawn Taker, WrestleMania 25. My third one is one no one else is going to come up with, because it's a little bit personal. Because way, way back, it used to be really hard to watch independent wrestling in general. YouTube was not a thing once, kids. I remember hearing about, you know, I had heard a lot about ECW growing up, and I managed to catch a few little bits on tapes from people, possibly including Liam. And then after that, it was, you know, there was a dull period after ECW died, where, you know, there was this, you know, I was distantly aware of an Australian thing going on, and this, that, and the other, a few other things. And then came Ring of Honor. And the first thing I saw of Ring of Honor, which is what opened my eyes to what I would consider the modern independents as they are today, was a match that was on whatever the fucking file share it was. It was like either Napster or Morpheus or Lime, whatever the fuck it was. LimeWire, possibly.
Kazaa.
You typed in Ring of Honor, you did not get much. What you got, though, what you could get, and what I did get, was AJ Styles, low-key Paul London from the first anniversary show, which no one around this table is going to fucking remember, because it doesn't really matter. It was just, it was a really, it's a good three-way. I watched it again recently after my brother brought it up, just randomly in conversation. And that match, you know, to me, exemplifies this is the era of modern wrestling we move into. And a lot of that is stemming from a year prior, and even before that, the King of Indie stuff, and how all that came to be. And historically, that was really interesting, and I can watch that match back, and for the first time in probably a decade, whatever, just about, and I could remember it all. I could remember every fucking spot. I must have watched that match dozens of times back then, because it was the only thing I could get at the time. In it, it links my brain to so many other things. Seeing AJ Styles when he was young, not that he really changed that much, I suppose. Hair grew. Thinking about stuff like Paul London, it jolts me to when Paul London came into the WWF or WWE or whatever it was, and watching Velocity during that period, which was a good show. And it's all these little memory links, and just thinking that Loki was just the scariest motherfucker you've ever seen, and he really was for a period. So, yeah, that was just a personal choice, and it's not really about the match. Though it is not a bad match, it's not really about the match, it's where it sends me when I watch it, and I think that could last a lifetime.
Excellent pick. I love picks like that. The individual picks are really solid. Carl, we've got to, I believe, two of yours.
Austin Brett, which obviously I've waxed lyrical about over countless podcasts and did again this evening, as well as Steamboat Savage, which I that thought might get a little bit more love than it has. And the last match is a pairing we've already mentioned, and I've mentioned specifically, pointing out that they've had better matches. And the match I'm going to pick of theirs, I would argue, is not their best match bell to bell by any means. But it's Mankind versus The Rock on Raw. We talk about we talk about emotional tie-ins and something you want to take away to that desert island. I know they've had better matches as a pairing. I know they've had better matches individually. But there are very few wrestlers that I have either associated with or empathised with or sort of been able to relate to, in a sense. And I've mentioned before, Foley, in whatever incarnation, I have felt is someone I can relate to, or I can look at and sort of almost see a little bit of that in me in some strange way. You can't, not everyone can look like The Rock, not everyone can look like Brock Lesnar and be a top guy, but you can look at Foley and see him as a top guy. For him to have that crowning moment is very sweet. This is one where the crowd absolutely plays a part. I defy anyone to go back during Austin's peak and find a louder reaction for when the glass shatters. Because that crowd comes absolutely unglued. There may be one or two examples, the Zamboni perhaps, one or two others, but this is right up there. And just for Foley to get that nice moment, which I never thought he would get, warms the cockles of whatever remains of my very old and very small heart.
A great pick there. I just love that, how crazy the fans. That's one of those moments I can just watch back forever, where the fact the fans go crazy when the three count is registered. Holty?
Yeah, so I think I've alluded to the fact that two of mine have been spoken about, the Rumble 92 at length, so nothing more to say about that. I settled on Sean and Hunter, but my last choice, it's a bit of an out of left field, and it's Daniel Bryan versus Desmond Wolfe from Ring of Honor Unified.
Oh, yes.
But I'd just like to
preempt Nigel McGuinness.
Nigel McGuinness versus
Bryan Danielson.
I was just trying for the cheap pop. but it was.
All those TNA fans out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, McGuinness and Danielson. This is a really personal one. It's 2006, I believe.
Yeah.
And I had actually fallen out of sort of love with wrestling. Probably I got back in around 99, stuck around till 03 when I was at uni, and it became much harder to watch shows on a weekly basis. And I'd pretty much called time by 06 and not really watching. My brother got in touch, he was living in Manchester at the time, and asked me and a couple of mates if we wanted to go to watch Ring of Honor in Liverpool. And we'd heard of Ring of Honor, you know, we sort of knew what it was, but had never, as Luke alluded to, been able to watch it at length and stuff. Went to the Olympia, I think it was, at Liverpool, and fuck me if it didn't blow my mind. The whole card was amazing, but we went to the fan access thing in the afternoon, the sort of meeting room and stuff like that, and these two guys were talking in like a press conference, and I was sitting there, these fuckers are talking like this is a serious thing, you know, like they were talking about they were explaining the rules around the Pure Championship, and I was thinking, man, that's in this quirk, you know, the number of rope breaks and all those sorts of things. And I got to the main event and I thought, it can't get any better. You know, I've seen a bit of everything. And holy shit, if that match did not just literally leave me thinking, what have I left behind on the table? You know, what have I been missing through this time? And I think that match single-handedly made me say, I'll never proper fully give up on wrestling again. I might dip in and out and watch bits lose, but I will never take my eyes off the ball that much, that if a match is like that are happening and someone says to me, dude, you've got to see this. Like Liam, I don't watch Japanese matches actively, but if Liam or G says to me, you should have watched that, I'm like, okay, cool, because if someone's recommended to me. And that match, right from the start, Danielson comes out to the final countdown, and yeah. I'm sitting thinking, I don't know any of these wrestlers, I won't know their entrances, I won't know their music, I won't know the bits I'm supposed to put for. When he came out to the final countdown, I was up like a motherfucker, screaming and shouting, and it was just awesome. And I zipped off afterwards to the merch stand, and I made sure I got a McGuinness t-shirt, you know, and I really did, as jaded as I was and as sort of fed up of wrestling at the time, and I'm not talking about, oh, I got fallen out of WWE, I was fed up of wrestling, full stop, that night, that match, blitz it, and I could survive a desert island if I could feel that every now and then.
Ah, lovely.
Welcome
stuff.
Back to the fold.
Yeah. No bumps required.
I'm going to. I'll wait until next week when we've got more time for mine. Oh,
fucking scum! Copper!
Say it now.
We got to have something for next week.
We'll do it, Kieran.
We'll do it next week. We'll do it next week when we got more time.
He
we can go into it.
Know.
I don't.
He doesn't fucking know.
He's pulling a Zabisco.
Yeah.
We will be back next week with part two. More fun wrestling match memories. This has been a lot of fun this week. This is fun nostalgia. Hopefully you folks at home have enjoyed it too. And we will be back for part two next week. I want to thank everybody for listening. If we haven't got to your feedback on this show, we will be doing it next week. We will get to it. We will get to as much as we possibly can. So we will we'll get to plenty more matches that can make the desert island. Four. Matt Holt.
I look forward to Desert Island Dudes, where I choose my three favourite pro wrestlers to take with me to a desert island.
Four, Carl Jones.
I'm not bringing a rose with me.
Four, Luke Edwards.
Wrestling needs more hangman Nazis.
And four, G. John Chase.
Right, just seriously watch it. Right at the very end, right, Ric Flair's absolutely covered in blood, right? He's also covered in green mist, right? Because
I am Liam O'Rourke, and we are out of here. Talk to you next week.